Now and Again is brought to you by the Cage Club Podcasting Network. For all things Cage, Keanu, and more, head on over to cageclub.me. That is cageclub.me.
It's summer 2002. The first Spider-Man movie with Tobey Maguire debuts. Elon Musk founds SpaceX. And a show called American Idol debuts. Stay tuned. We're going to have some words about that in the future. But this is Now That's What I Call Music, Volume 10. Double digits, baby.
Please play this song on the radio. Please play this song on the radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Now and Again. This is Now That's What I Call Music, Volume 10. And with us today, an old friend of mine, a ghost from a previous episode. You might remember him from the Best of 2016 episode. It's D. D, how are you?
Kind of ghost from a previous podcast. God, it's like a eulogy.
Hey, how's it going?
It is going well. So for those who aren't like one of the five people who listened to our old podcast, we had a bad movie podcast way back in the day. And we had a good time on that. And Pam, previous guest, was on that as well. And it's nice to have these little reunions here and there.
Yeah. Have you had Rob on yet? Is he scheduled in?
No, but I don't know if he listens to this. But Rob, I'm putting you on blast. You got to get on this podcast one of these days. So you were almost on episode 2, the cursed episode that had a very difficult time getting made. If you had to compare these two soundtracks that I forced you to listen to, Now 10 and Now 2, even though you didn't get to talk about 2 on the air, which one's better?
I would say, honestly, the last one, only because I have way more written down to talk about for this one. Well, the last one was just like, I mean, a lot of it was just like, oh, no, this is like a really good song. Like, we'll probably talk a little bit about the music video. And like this, there's a couple of parts of my notes here where it's just like, what the fuck were they thinking? Like, why is there so much goddamn CGI in this entire fucking album?
There is a lot of early 2000s, like Attack of the Clones CGI all throughout these music videos.
It's insane.
It's pretty hideous. And we will definitely get deeper into that. And I'm with you. This now is kind of Kylie Minogue plus Shakira plus a bunch of other people.
It's the B-sides. It's like the shit tracks from a lot of relatively good musicians that have, like, in some cases been you know what? Actually, Thousand Miles is also pretty good. But I mean, I just like that song in general. But, you know, other than that, like, yeah, there's a bunch of just crap on here.
Yeah, it's not one of the best albums. The pop is, like you said, kind of B-sides, etc. from a lot of artists. And the rock is, ooh, and we will get to that. We will get to one of history's greatest monsters at the end of this album. But let's talk about context. Summer 2002. D, where are you in your life?
This is embarrassing, but everybody knows this already. I have just started playing D&D for the first time. I'm slowly becoming a nerd's nerd and just expanding outwards as a person, both in terms of my interests in things and my physical self. It was sophomore year in high school. It was a wonderful, magical time.
I imagine that we did spend a lot of that summer throwing dice around basements.
That's a podcast on its own.
That is a podcast on its own. And you know what? I ain't ashamed of that at all. It is funny because there were these kind of, I felt like this dichotomy of a life that I was living. Like, I was going to punk shows and stuff like that and spiking up my hair and loving that. But I was also playing D&D and keeping that part from like my punk friends. But then I was also like listening to a ton of pop music at this time and keeping that from everybody because you're 15. And
yeah, no, like, you were. Because I remember this, and you were at that time the punk guy who was also a gigantic fan of one of the musicians that is on this album.
I was cranking her album in my car constantly around this time. Yeah. Oh, now I own it. Back then, you had to be a pretty close friend to know that I was spinning that and some of her other back catalog at the time.
You had to be a really close friend to remember that you actually had a D&D character whose name was Fair Kaimin, because you were a fan of Liz Phair and Kylie Moog.
There you go.
And now that's recorded for posterity.
Yeah, there you go. There's the merging of my two gross lives, D&D and pop music. Yeah, I actually specifically remember that. I was coming to a game, I had no idea what I was going to call my character, and I just, like, looked up, I pulled down the thing that blocks out the sun, that little, and I had that CD case there, and I just looked at the first two ones, and it was, like, there was a bunch of punk ones, and there was Kylie Minogue and Liz Phair, and I just went, yeah, smashed it up, that sounds like a really dumb, actually, that might have been a Star Wars RPG character name.
No, that was for the Amnesia game that I ran.
Oh, like, okay.
I mean, way back when.
Yeah, and yeah. I just looked up, and I was like, yeah, I remember that those was, together, the George Lucas school of naming characters.
Yeah. Well, the craziest part was that wasn't even the most ridiculous name that somebody came up with for that game. This was 2002, and I had just been gifted my first CD that I had not purchased for myself, which I think was Linkin Park's Hybrid Theory.
Nice!
Yeah, I listened the shit out of that CD.
So you definitely weren't doing any secret deep dives into pop music like I was?
Oh, God, no. Okay. No. I think the first CD that I ever bought with my own money that wasn't just like something that I got from my parents or got as a gift was Sting and the Police, the Best Of. And then in a proud family tradition of picking up CDs that you think are one type of CD and are another, I accidentally got a tribute to Hoobastank instrumental album, which I still have somewhere.
Oh, boy.
It's a proud family tradition. We actually have a cassette tape of all of the music from Aladdin in Spanish because it was being sold at work and mom didn't read it carefully enough, and so we have it, and it's amazing. It's actually a really good album, but it's something that we still talk about.
That is
and I hope she never listens to this.
That's a mom as hell action right there. And we'll talk about some other stuff about this time and about us as it comes up naturally, but let's talk about Miss Britney Spears with Overprotected. Is it starting to feel like, after maybe two songs about how miserable you are as a pop star, that it becomes a call for help and not just a song?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is the beginning of the end for her as a pop musician. Because, I mean, what was it, any of her stuff like around this? Was Toxic around this?
Well, see, this is where you're a little bit wrong, because we're hitting this low point, but she's going to rebound with Toxic.
Oh, I could have sworn Toxic was before this.
No.
Oh, this is like the Britney slump in the the early 2000s?
Yeah, this is like the last remnants of the singles that they could pull off of Oops, I Did It Again. And it's on the Slave Free album. This is off the Britney album. And we are pretty desperate for singles at this point.
Yeah, no, I believe that. Because, I mean, this is just, it's a bad Britney song, which is a bad song.
So the singles for this album started off with I'm a Slave for You, and that peaked at like 3 or 4. And then slowly each single after that like drops exponentially. Like the next one's gonna top at like 35, the next one at like 90. And this is kind of a real slump period for Britney Spears. And I think this is kind of because the sound of pop music is changing a little bit. It's in transition. And this song doesn't sound like anything.
Well, she's kind of trying to play catch up to Christina Aguilera's like grown up pop girl thing too. And like, at least with the way the music video is, like the way this entire album is like basically just trying to catch up with where Christina Aguilera went after like that initial Genie in the Bottle kind of stuff came out.
Yeah, and pop in general is kind of moving away from that choreographed dancing thing with the boy bands dying.
Yeah,
and she's going to have to find a new gimmick, really. And she's going to get to the point where she can just be Britney Spears, but right now she still feels like she's being a pop girl instead of her, if that makes sense.
She's singing in a Bollywood movie?
You know what? If you told me that this was right after two people catch eyes across the room, I would completely completely believe it.
That is essentially what this entire feel of this is.
There's not a lot to say, in my opinion, about this Britney Spears song. No. Once again, she's singing about how much she hates being a pop star, and it's, knowing what we know now, it's actually it's kind of sad.
It makes perfect sense.
Yeah, and we don't know how much of these songs she was actually writing, but I mean, it would make sense if she had some sort of at least lyrical input.
I'm sure she
input.
Had some editorial, yeah, like lyrical or editorial input on them. Because, I mean, she's still at the end of the day got to sing them.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, there's nothing going on here. It sounds very mechanical. It sounds very overproduced. And there's a couple of times they put this weird, like, phaser audio effect over her voice. And it's out of place. It's really just for the sake of having some more shit that they can put on it.
It's almost like they were starting to lose confidence in her voice, which is weird. Because, I mean, like, it's 2017 and she's, like got a permanent spot in Vegas and is doing really well for herself. Good on her. And yet somehow in 2002, they were like, oh no, like this is like the start of the end.
Well, I mean, you kind of hinted at this idea of Britney and Christina having these parallel career paths. And everyone always knew that Christina was the singer and Britney was the performer. We've discussed this a lot, and it's been in a lot of liner notes that when Britney doesn't have some kind of effect on her, sometimes she can be a little pitchy or a lot pitchy.
Yeah.
She's not the best singer. Yeah, she's a performer, and that matters.
Not the best. Yes, it absolutely does.
But yeah, I kind of agree with you that maybe they felt like they were losing confidence in her, or they saw that the times were changing. And I mean, we're gonna get a revitalization of Britney temporarily, because we're gonna get Toxic, which is, you know, an all-time great, but then there's gonna be a harsh decline.
Yeah, no, I don't know. Maybe saying that they were losing confidence is like too fine a point on it. Like, it definitely sounded more overproduced than her other stuff, which is already pretty produced.
Yes. Oh, completely. 100%. It's very heavily compressed. Yeah. There's a very specific sound with pop at this time, and I can only describe it as, like, you can hear it the most in the percussion. Like, it doesn't sound like drums. It sounds like someone hitting a pipe in a warehouse.
Yeah. Yeah, it totally sounds... It definitely sounds like that. But it just did not sound good at all.
It's just this sound that they were going for, and there's not a lot of... they take a lot of the bass out of these songs as well, so they sound very hollow, which when she already has a very nasal voice means that there's a lot of air throughout the song, and that's not really what you want in a pop song, but that's what they were doing a lot of at this time.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And I mean, I guess that can segue us into the next song, because everything that we just said, this song does the opposite. It's Kylie Minogue's Can't Get You Out of My Head. This is one of the best pop songs of the 2000s.
You will not find me disagreeing. This is now, that's what I call weird fucking music videos.
Let's talk about the music video a little bit. We kind of
mentioned... I feel like I have to, because I feel like if we're going to talk about this song, I'm just going to keep bringing it back to that.
Yeah.
It's just bizarre. It looks like something out of, I mean, like we said this off air, it sounds like something out of Ultraviolet.
Yeah.
Or it looks like something out of Ultraviolet.
Aeon Flux.
Or like Equilibrium or any of those dystopian. Yeah, the Fifth Element. I mean, somebody had to design these costumes, and then somebody had to pay like real dollars for them. And then...
Real pounds, sir.
Okay, yeah. Real pounds. Real pounds sterling, and have people like put them on.
At the same time, though, I mean, maybe I don't always remember this video, though I don't think about it too much. It's unique, especially compared to everything else we're doing on this album, or even in like the last five now albums. They're trying something different, and even if it doesn't especially land, it's better than just someone singing at a camera and dancing, which, I mean, is kind of happening here.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, if you wanted to counterpoint this to another really good song that has a really, like, meh music video of, like, Greatest Mistake, or Favorite Mistake.
By Sheryl Crow.
Favorite Mistake. Yeah, because, like, that. I mean, that's another fantastic pop song from the late 90s, but it's a garbage music video, because it's just her singing.
Right. At least that video, that's just kind of her in a room. That at least kind of fits the... tone of the song and the mood of the song, whereas like Overprotected, a bunch of people having fun and dancing in a warehouse is not necessarily encapsulating the idea of please help me, I'm a pop star, no one will let me have my own life.
And I'll never understand the concept of like there are people who are actually paid to direct these things, like they are credible directors, and some of them actually go on to become real directors.
David Fincher, like, you know, he started with music videos.
Yeah exactly. I guess you're right. Like, it is a little, at least inventive. Like, they're at least doing something here that fits the song somewhat, I guess, a little bit, kind of.
I like that it feels like there was more put into it than, let's choreograph something, and we'll rent a warehouse, and we'll dress it, and we'll shoot it extremely flat, and you'll sing at the camera.
Well, that's also because, like, I mean, this is being shot in England, so as you're saying, like, I'm sure it costs a whole lot more to rent a warehouse in pounds than it does to rent a green screen room.
Well, you know, Attack of the Clones was being filmed in England at this time, so they probably just rented out, like, some of George Lucas's giant green warehouse and were like, hey.
50 quid and you can film for the weekend.
It is hideous. Like, it's just, but all 2000s CGI does not hold up. This is not the worst of what we will get on this album.
True.
And a lot of stuff is doing that. Again, another thing along with choreographed dancing that I'm glad is kind of gone from music videos is this over-reliance on gross CGI.
they're relying on something other than like the pure like visual smorgasbord of a bunch of shit thrown at you on the screen, which is like they're relying number one on a good song, and they're relying on like, I don't know, like trying a little bit to be something kind of unique. Though I guess maybe not that unique considering how much CG is in the rest of this.
Yeah, album. I mean, it's a trend that's happening, but at least it looks, it's not as aggressively bad CGI. This is just backgrounds where that like that's clearly CGI. They're clearly on a green screen, but there's some videos we're going to do that's just almost entirely like they're riding CGI motorcycles and flying through CGI cityscapes, and it looks like it's something from PlayStation 2.
They're standing on CGI clouds as like, yeah.
Something I noticed and that I want to talk about with what Kylie Minogue does as an artist in a music video, the way that the camera works with her. Britney Spears does a lot of singing into the camera. In Britney Spears' video, the camera kind of, it really feels like a lot of time it represents the male gaze as well. Like, it's following, like, the curves of her stomach and, like, up her legs. And there's that shot in that one video where she just bends over and shows, like, monster cleavage. And that's all well and fine. There's a long history in pop of that. And that will never end. Right. Don't get me wrong. But here, as opposed to the camera going at the artist, Kylie Minogue, you know, this is probably her 8th or 7th album by this point. She's been around since her cover of The Locomotion in the 80s. She is pop royalty by this point in 2002.
Wait, that was a cover? You just blew my mind. I always thought that was just her.
Well, in the 80s, but The Locomotion was based on like an older song from like the...
Oh, I never knew that.
Yeah. That's like a 50s or 60s.
Oh, oh, wow. I always assumed that she just came up with that.
Nope. That's a cover. But she came from Australia. She was big there, big in the UK. She is a goddess by this point. This is just her cementing her status and getting a foothold. As small as it is in America, America's not going to embrace her as much as they really should have. But again, because I just think her sound is so different. UK pop has a very different sound than what American pop was doing right now. Like, it has, like, feeling to it. It's got a beat. It doesn't just sound like...
Emotions?
Yeah, exactly. This song, the sounds, like, that dunk is the best way that I can kind of put it. In the synth, it just sounds so much unlike... Like, nothing sounds like that in American pop right now. And by right now, I mean 2002. But to go back to what I was saying, she attacks the camera throughout this video. The camera is not coming at her and going up her body. The camera is stationary and she is attacking it. She is aggressive. And that shows so much more confidence. Just this subtle sign of a pop star who knows what the fuck she's doing and has her own sense of self.
Somebody who is very clearly, I don't know, I think you said conference already, but like, yeah, like a self-confidence, like an assurance that she is like the fucking queen
absolutely.
Of pop in 2002.
She slays throughout this. Her vocal performance is great. And Kylie Minogue, you know, we talked about Britney Spears is not the best vocalist.
Mm-hmm.
Kylie Minogue is not ever going to, you know, slay a national anthem with a bunch of runs up and down throughout, you know? That's a Christina Aguilera kind of thing. Kylie also has that kind of nasally voice that Britney Spears does, but I think her songs are so much more tailored to her strengths.
Do you probably know this already? Like, she does a fair amount of the writing herself, right? Like, it's not just, like, a team of people that hand her a song to sing out.
That's a good question. I feel like by now, she's...
Because, I would imagine that, like, part of the reason why... Well, I'm sure now things have changed, but, like, I have a feeling that at least for, like, at her peak, it was like, okay, no, I'm just, like, I'm fucking Kylie Minogue, I'm gonna sing this, and it's gonna be great. So, like, she knows exactly what she's saying. Which is part of the reason why there's that, like, self-assurance and control there.
Yeah, I'm looking at the song credits for Fever. She's got a songwriting credit on Love at First Sight, which is my favorite song off that album, and a couple of other of the big singles, like In Your Eyes, but she does not have a songwriting credit on Can't Get You Out of My Head.
Actually, you're right.
At the same time, I feel like maybe when you're that established, it's kind of like how by the time there's like a 6th season of a sitcom, they'll start looking at spec scripts because people who aren't on the writing staff can understand the characters enough that someone from the outside can still write a good script for a show. Whereas in like the first season or two, even the writers in the writer's room are still trying to find. I feel like people at this point who are writing for Kylie Minogue are like, we know how to do Kylie really well at this point. Like, we know how to tailor to her strengths, how to continue on this kind of legacy of what she's been doing in the past and what works for her and what doesn't. Because this doesn't sound that different from a song like Please Stay, which is like 2 albums before this.
Yeah, no, I think you're right about that. Like, she has she has at this point, because she's been in the business this long, like, she has her sound. And even if she's not making it herself, people know how to make it for her, if that makes sense.
No, it's 100%. And I think that's the sign of when you're long established. I think, I don't know if Britney Spears is ever going to put out another single again. I think she's fine with her Vegas shtick that she's doing, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like if she was to put out another song, there are people who would be like, we can write a Britney song. Like, we know what that formula is now. Whereas maybe at this point, only three albums deep, maybe they didn't really know.
Especially because, like, I mean, she was definitely, I mean, that's the unfortunate thing of being a pop kid growing up, is that, like, you kind of have this expectation of what you're going to sound like, and then you reach a point of, like, putting out something like Toxic, and it's, I mean, it's not, it's a great song, but it's not, it's a different Britney.
Right, yeah. If you took Oops, I Did It Again, and let's just say Overprotected, because it's here, and Overprotected and Toxic, and put them all together, like, there's not a really a line that goes through all of them. Yeah, there's not a consistent sound there. Especially with Toxic, where it's got that killer synth line. Like, what? There were no killer synth riffs on, like, any other Britney songs. And I don't even know if that's so much following the trend of pop at the time. I guess we'll see. I don't remember what else was around when Toxic was coming out. But I am excited to get there. But I was very excited to get to Can't Get You Out of My Head because, I mean, hey, that describes the song. It is one of the earwormiest pop songs ever. That La 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 chorus. I don't love La La's or Yeah Yeah's and Na's and choruses, but sometimes it just works. And when it works, it gets in your brain.
Yeah. I mean, the opening of this song is just as much of a grab. Like, it just gets stuck in your head. You know exactly what it is, even if you're not into pop music, as, like, I don't know, like the opening sax riff for Careless Whisper is, for somebody who's not that into whatever the fuck genre that is. Everybody knows it.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, oh, if I heard that opening 5 seconds of this song at a wedding or at a bar after I have, you know, 5 or 6 drinks, I will become the loudest, screechiest white girl, and I will be out there on the floor making a fool out of myself 100% of the time.
Listeners, this is true. This man has seen it. I've seen some shit.
It's a real thing. Well, Miss Minogue, I know you're listening. Thank you for saving this album, because it is pretty dire otherwise. And if you have never listened to the Kylie Minogue album that this is on, Fever, it is fire all the way through. So check that out. Anything else about Miss Minogue?
I feel like at this point we're kind of just saying as much as we can to not have to go on to the rest of this album.
Yeah, there's some trash here, but I, you know what? I think we're kind of both in agreement that Enrique Iglesias' Escape is not there. It's not bad. Not bad at all.
No. Honestly, it was like, If the last song was the peak of this album, and it's definitely like a bimodal peak, because in the next part of this, we're going to get to the other really fantastic track on this album. This is like just like a slight step down, I feel. Like, it's not the best track on this album, but it's not terrible. It's actually really good. I like it.
Yeah. There's not a lot moving to it through the music. Like, I don't know what was going on in North American pop that they just didn't put bass into their fucking songs.
No. It was like almost like this fear of it. If you put bass into it, it would turn into something else, like pop rock or something.
Yeah.
I don't even know.
And
they were just bass averse.
But what this song does have that, you know, we talked about it, what separates Toxic from a lot of those other songs is this song has a hook outside of just the melodies
of
the chorus. Exactly.
Yeah.
This song has some memorable stuff to it. And, I think this is what he does best. I'm not a huge Enrique Iglesias guy. I don't know a lot of his deep catalog, but he does these kind of like personal singing directly to one person, sultry, like we're going to fuck now, but in a romantic way songs.
I mean, it sounds like a song that was written for somebody.
Well,
and
the video does have his longtime and I think possibly even still current girlfriend, Anna Kournikova, all over it.
Yeah. Because some people have all the luck.
Yeah, he is a good-looking guy. I mean,
they're actually, yeah, I had to look this up. They are in fact still together.
That's a long relationship in the celebrity world.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, we'll be talking about Jennifer Lopez and Mark Anthony soon. Like, Jennifer Lopez has been through about 6 husbands in the time that Enrique and Anna have been together. Good for them.
Yeah, you know, more power to them.
A music video that does have a man on a CGI motorcycle.
Yeah, this is just the beginning of the CGI motorcycles for this album, because this is not the first, I mean, this is the first, but it's not the last.
Now, if we drink for every, like, CGI mode of transportation, we'll be pretty drunk by the end of this.
I mean, we'll be dead. If we go through all 23 of these, we'll be dead. Yeah, it's... I just don't know. I don't understand, because it's not like the CGI motorcycle thing really does anything for the rest of the song. The rest of the song is essentially just this, like, hey, I'm into you and now we're gonna fuck song.
I'm into it.
Yeah.
Maybe some of why I think this song is good is because everything else around it is so bad, but I think this song...
No, I think it's just generally, like, a good, catchy song. Like, it's got, like, a nice beat. It's got a nice, like, feel to it. Like, yeah, like, a nice, like, feel to it outside of just the repetition of the chorus. You don't necessarily get a lot of that on the rest of this album.
And I can appreciate a good, simple chorus. You could run, you could hide, but you can't escape my love. That's the hook. Like, that's the line. Like, I feel like I could not hear this song again for another 5 years. And when it comes on, maybe I won't be able to sing every word, but I'll know
but you'll
exactly
know
how to sing
you'll
that
absolutely
line.
Absolutely know that
yeah,
one.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. It's a solid song. I feel like we're going to be saying goodbye to Enrique Iglesias for a while. I could be wrong about that because now sometimes put on some weird shit. But I feel like the only other Enrique Iglesias song that we have not covered that I know is the really grody one about him declaring that tonight he will be fucking you. But that's a while away.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
No, that is a while away.
Yeah. So we'll see you later, Enrique, unless you decide to drop some B-sides on us. Let's go on to Mark Anthony with I've Got You.
Basically, Mark Anthony's the sweetest thing.
It's every Mark Anthony song. Every one of his... I mean, I don't know Mark Anthony super well, but we've had three-ish songs of his so far, and I don't think I could tell the music video or the song apart. They all sound exactly the same.
Just generic Mark Anthony. I mean, the lyrics are kind of like an alternate universe version of Wasn't Me, where it actually wasn't him.
Oh, yeah.
Which, I mean, like, I kind of appreciate that. It's a clever thing that actually, like, you know, to our point about the music video is not going with the song. I mean, that this is a music video that is absolutely written for the song, and it works.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct.
It's just not a very good song.
Yeah, it's bland. And this guy was established, you know, in Central America at this time. He was a big Latin artist, so I feel like this is another case where, like, they knew his formula, and they wrote to it. It's just that he's, like, a mom rock version of Enrique Iglesias.
Well, I mean, like, I'm sure he's popular in his own market. It's just kind of like someone we're going to be talking about later who's also big in Latin America. It's just, like, it's a sound that we're just not into here.
Yeah, it's tough to cross over. And, yeah, we're going to talk about a lot of artists who do that Latin invasion that is happening right now. We can't ignore that on any now for, like, the next year.
Was there only room for one Enrique Iglesias and they had to go with Enrique Iglesias?
That's a good question. When another country, when they do that invasion of another country, they tried. You can tell that they really tried. They threw everything at the wall and saw what would stick. I don't think Mark Anthony hit the same audience in America that Enrique Iglesias did. And I don't know how much of that is the song, how much of it is their physical look, persona, and marketing. But Mark Anthony just seems like the mom version of Enrique Iglesias to me.
Yeah, I can see that.
Just kind of dull. It kind of exists. I feel bad that I can't say more. And I also feel bad that Just Kind of There is going to be something that I use for a lot of the songs on this now, at least in the first half.
Well, because, like, it should be said, because we're gonna be hating on a lot of the songs on this album. It's not that they're necessarily terrible. It's just that they're not, like, they don't deserve to be on any kind of top chart anywhere.
Yeah, and that's pop. Pop is...
They're just not good.
Derivative. Like, pop is the Ouroboros. Yeah. Like, it eats itself every time. And so you can only have so much stuff that sounds the same before you start to go, yeah, I mean, it's just another one.
It's like another Britney Spears song, another Mark Anthony song, another, you know, another NSYNC song.
Oh, yeah, let's go into NSYNC's Girlfriend. I do think that this sounds a lot different than any other NSYNC song, but this is it. This is the end.
Yeah, but that's because this is essentially... I mean, yeah, this is the end, but this is also because, like, this is essentially an NSYNC Nice Guy Screed.
And all the boy bands kind of did that because their target audience was, you know, 15-year-old girls.
Sure. I mean, like, this song wears a fedora.
Well, this song wears a beanie or two, or a sideways baseball cap, or one of those Newsies hats,
yep.
If we're just going by what the members of NSYNC are wearing in this video.
Which I'm fairly sure is just what they wear. They just walked on set with it.
And we're really passing the baton. We've kind of always been talking about on this show how NSYNC was Justin and JC up front. This is really kind of where they're saying, yeah, they're going to be the two that are left. NSYNC's going to be over. This is the passing of the baton. And even if they're kind of saying both of them are going to go on, like, it's still the Justin show. And we've talked about it a million times. I don't know if it's worth going over again, mm-hmm. unless, you know, feel free to add to it because you have not gone over it. But I've talked about how NSYNC is just, it's clear that Justin is going to be the one who shoots right out the gate from the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I don't have much to add because I completely agree. I think that was clear very early on. It's especially clear now. But this is just essentially Justin Timberlake and his backup band. It's not going to be as scummy as like how Destiny's Child worked, but it's still the way things are going to go.
And maybe a lot of that is hindsight because of who Justin Timberlake is now. Like maybe if we were doing this podcast in 2002, we would be arguing. There'd be a whole EP dedicated to which member of NSYNC is going to be the breakout. And someone would be saying it's going to be Lance Bass. And we it might happen, but we don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I agree. Because, I mean, if you told me in 2002 that Justin Timberlake was going to be singer, songwriter, and director, or actor, Justin Timberlake, I would have told you to go fuck yourself. And I would have been very wrong.
If you told me that Justin Timberlake was going to have an appearance, and a good appearance, in a Coen Brothers movie, I would tell you to go fuck right back off to the holodeck. Because there's no way that that's the real life.
Yeah, and I mean, he's had good stuff other than that. Because, like, I mean, a lot of people didn't like, was it In Time? But I thought it was okay.
So, you would think that he could only play douchebags, because he does that... And look, he's Justin Timberlake. And he does that in Alpha Dog. He does that excellently in, in David town. Fincher's Social Network, where he plays the founder of Napster, coming back around.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, like, you would totally expect him to be just, like, a constant douchebag character is his niche, but no, he's got range.
Yeah, he's got good comedic timing. I mean, the stuff he does with The Lonely Island, and we do, just FYI, folks, we are going to do an EP on The Lonely Island at some point, because they've come up so often, I feel like we do need to kind of do a focus on them. But he's got great comedic timing with them. I don't think Justin Timberlake was always able to laugh at himself. There's that pretty famous episode of Punk'd where he gets punked, and clearly switches on a persona the moment he knows that there's cameras on him. I think now he can laugh at himself.
I would hope so. I mean, kind of have to have learned by now.
When you have that much money.
But at the same time, I mean, in another case of weirdly long-lasting pop music relationships, like, he's still with Jessica Biel, and more power to him.
Yeah, you know, for the entire, like, early 2000s being about Britney and JT, JT did pretty okay for himself in that regard. And there's no one in this. Like, we could talk about how an artist, like, sucks. Like, they're not good. Or, you know, like, we will with Nickelback next episode. Or, but nothing that we're saying.
Just like, not having a presence here.
Nothing that we're saying is personal.
It's not even like they're not good. They're just not here.
Like, but we don't wish ill on any of these artists, except maybe Chris Brown in, like, 3 years when we get to him.
Well, right.
Fuck that guy.
Right.
And I guess in some ways, like, R. Kelly, but whatever. But for the most part, like, I'm very happy. I'm very happy that, I'm sure Mark Anthony is doing great for himself, and I'm glad that he's alive and that is a thing. I don't wish ill on him just because I think his songs suck.
Right.
I'm very happy that all of that Justin Timberlake's doing great. Good for him.
You don't have to worry about Justin Timberlake.
But at the same time, he's a shit zillionaire. I'm never going to worry about him. I just, you know, I want to clarify that we don't wish ill on these humans just because we
definitely
think
not.
That sometimes
definitely
they
not.
Suck.
I mean, like, I don't fundamentally even wish ill on, like, some of the other people that we're going to be talking about today, like the Baha Men or B2K, I just don't like what they do, and that's okay.
I mean, I'm going to take a dig at this very fake herb who's singing the next song, Jennifer Lopez, in I'm Going to Be All Right. Because holy shit, you know, we talked about how, does it take three songs before it becomes a cry for help? How many songs does Jennifer Lopez have to do, or videos have to show how real and how from Brooklyn she is before we go, all right, you're trying a little too hard,
right.
Rich-ass Jennifer Lopez, who probably has not been to Bed-Stuy in 40 fucking years, even though you're 41.
I couldn't even really get this song because it just felt like a really shitty breakup song, if that makes sense. Like I get now that we're talking about it, that it's like a, yeah, I'm from Brooklyn and I'm doing good song, but it actually sounded like it was just like a shitty, like, it sounded like she was breaking up with Brooklyn, if that makes sense.
It could be, but it's definitely a strong independent woman song, and I wonder how much of that is aftershocks of the success of Destiny's Child.
Yeah, maybe.
Because, like, her early songs are very, like, dancey. Like, Waiting for Tonight, you know, a lot of her early stuff is just, like, gonna go out and dance. This is a dance song. Everyone dance. And those were better. This is, you know, kind of snap and a head nod, and that's fine. Does but it... Destiny's Child, for about a year, has been doing that fiercely. And this...
Like, trying to catch that same magic?
Yeah, a little bit. And it doesn't...
It doesn't at all.
I don't know if she's the kind of artist that should be doing that.
No, absolutely not. Especially because she's fairly established at this point, and you can't...
Right.
Like, you can't do both. You can't do your, like, third, I'm, you know, Jenny from the Block, and still... Yeah, no, you can't. Absolutely not.
She's... I mean, look, again, we don't hate these people. I don't know why I feel the need to... I think it's because we're so negative on a lot of these tracks, and this one feels so forced and so fake. She's still Jennifer Lopez. Like, we talked about how Kylie Minogue and the Britney videos knew how to work the camera around them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, half of this video was like, hey guys, remember how hot Jennifer Lopez is? Remember that her ass is insured for like $10 million? hey, remember Jennifer Lopez, guys? Yeah. Everybody? Hey.
There's a lot of male gaze in this.
Yeah, I mean, but that's going to happen.
It's actually like a little gratuitous.
Oh, this is a very sweaty music video. I feel like the director of this music video was a really big fan of Do the Right Thing.
Yeah.
Because it's very orange. Right. It's very sweaty. It's very, like front stoop.
Mm-hmm.
But it feels so forced. And the song, there's nothing to say about the song itself. It's boring. It's bland. Lyrically, yeah, it is what it is. There's a bunch of artists doing this exact thing right now, and Jennifer Lopez barely even sings at this song. She's like sing talking throughout most of it.
Is there any long stretch of actual like singing in this, or is it mostly just her talking to the camera?
There's like the harmonies in the chorus, but
that's about it.
Even
right?
That's not. Yeah, there's nothing interesting here, and the instrumentals can't back it up.
I think we're done with this fucking song.
I could be into that.
And, you know, I again, no ill will towards J Lo, but we're just done with this song.
You know, the Spanish invasion is not stopping because now is big into segregation. You know, they stick them all in a row. We got Paulina Rubio with Don't Say Goodbye.
Don't say goodbye. Don't turn away.
Remember this song. She is referred to by WikiWikiWowWowpedia as the Latin Madonna. She is fucking huge.
Really?
And has been that she was at the time. She still is. She was. She's massive on Latin radio in Mexico. It just did not translate here like Shakira did. Even Marc Anthony had a couple of hits. Paulina Rubio didn't make it, but I'm not gonna lie, this song is better than a lot of what we've heard.
Yeah, no, I'll give you that. Like, I mean, I guess she's kind of like Latin Robbie Williams. Like, she's still big. She's doing great. She's doing okay back in her, like, her
home
market.
Country.
Her home country, her market. Yeah. But yeah, no, she just never caught on here. And I don't really understand why. Like, I don't want to keep making the same wisecrack, but it's kind of like there was only room for one Shakira.
Yeah, and...
Just like there was only room for one Enrique Iglesias.
Right. This is also another video that is... This is the video that is entirely CGI. This music video has CGI motorcycles,
oh, yeah, no,
CGI monorails.
It looks like Reboot and Tron had a baby.
Yeah. This is Blade Runner meets Atlas Shrugged. it loves trains.
Yeah, yeah, it really does.
I think if I had to guess why this song didn't take off, and I don't know where it charted in America... fortunately, there's something called Wikipedia that can tell us that. It peaked in America at 31, so it at least broke the top 40. Top 40 mainstream went to 24, but it was like number one in Colombia, number five on the Hot Latin charts, number six on the dance club songs. And that's actually kind of what I was going to say. This doesn't feel like a 2002 song. This sounds like a 1997, like, Nicki French cover of Total Eclipse of the Heart, kind of like that.
Yeah.
That era of song.
With, like, in terms of, like, the beat and the feel.
Yeah. It.
Yeah.
it just seems like it's a little anachronistic.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Like, and it's kind of like this, like what you were saying earlier about pop meeting or a Boris that feeds on itself. Like, this is what people wanted right now, which is why it didn't catch. And if she'd hit this, like, maybe like 5-6 years before, I think she'd still be big here now.
Right, but I guarantee you 5 or 6 years ago, the fat old asshole white guy chomping on a cigar was like, oh, we can't market a Latin person in America.
The musical equivalent of like Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right.
And
about
that's a bummer.
I mean,
because this song's pretty good. Yeah, I dig this.
It really is. It's catchy.
And I feel like I kind of remember this song a little bit, but I also kind of feel like I remember it from like today's top dance hits, 25 dance tracks from around the world. And like, I feel like I remember like 15 seconds of it from one of those commercials, maybe.
Man, you really were into pop.
I mean, I feel like those commercials were everywhere.
I have no recollection of this song.
But I mean, did it at least catch your ear, or am I alone in that?
Oh no, I like it. It's definitely a very catchy song. It never ended up on my radar.
No, I hope, but I don't think Paulina Rubio will show up again. Because like I said, just her American crossover did not splash quite as wide as a lot of the other artists we've covered and will cover on this album. And yeah, I think maybe we missed out on some decent pop. I dig it. I dig the song, but thanks for coming, Paulina Rubio. Now got its jock jams into our now. It's Move It Like This by the Baja Men.
Fart.
Who decided that the Who Let the Dogs Out guys should have another song that people have to hear?
Some idiot in some marketing department somewhere who probably does not have a job anymore.
This song belongs on Jock Jams.
I mean, I just...
And leave it there.
It's just... It's a little bit catchy, but it's just so forgettable and so, like... I don't know. It's, like, catchy but bland,
this
if that makes sense.
This is the song that should play for 30 seconds in a stadium during a TV timeout of a New York Knicks game. There's no yes. other place for this. It's just... It's yes. not a full song. It's an idea. It's
almost like a... It's almost like a sample track that they put out were not expecting to get released. That they were just expecting like a bunch of other people to sample for them. Like from them.
I mean,
does that make sense? Because I totally see that. And it just seems like that's what happened here.
Sure, because the beat sounds like sample number 5 on your Casio keyboard.
Right. Like, you hit a button and this like plays for 10 seconds and that's all you're ever going to hear of it. Because why would you ever hear any more of it?
We're also, you know, we talked about how maybe Paulina Rubio, that sound fit in about 5 years earlier, and if it had come out, it would have been big. This, like, Jock Jams, I think, is like 5 or 6 years away from this. Like, this would have fit on a Jock Jams. Like, this doesn't
yeah.
fit now. Nobody wants this right now,
no.
I don't think. I feel like I have to look at where this peaked. This did not peak in single digits. This didn't chart in America. It was number 11 in New Zealand. Number 16 in the United Kingdom.
Yeah, like this got put in as a favor to somebody.
Oh, it was used in a promo for Nick Jr. that aired during the world premiere of the Blue Clues special. Like, yeah, that sounds right.
Wow.
Yeah, like that's exactly what this
Holy
song should
shit.
Be. 15 seconds for babies or 30 seconds while I'm ordering nachos from the third deck at a basketball game.
Yep.
We don't.
And I mean, like, seriously, what is with the home invasion turn house party thing in this music video? Because it's just like, am I the only one who's a little uncomfortable watching that?
Okay, so you found a music video for this
I'm
song.
Just like, oh no, there's absolutely a music video for this song.
Oh, well, please, share. Tell me all about it.
It's weird. Like, there's like, it's like a frat party, or a frat house, rather. But, like, the guys there just want to study or something. And it's, like, a bunch of white dudes. And then the Baja Men show up, and they essentially take the house over and turn it into a house party for the song.
Oh, my God, I found it. It's in, like, we've often said that the quality of song is directly correlated to the resolution of the video. And this was very clearly
yeah.
ripped off someone's VHS. Possibly one of the Baja
Absolutely.
Men's own VHS. Well, the video, at least, you know, if the song is 6 years out of when it would be worth listening to, the video is just every video. There's a million videos about people coming into some squares parties and turning it into a banger.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. It's just dumb.
It is.
I don't like it.
It's dumb. There's nothing to it.
Maybe because at that point in 2002, I was one of those squares that just wanted to study.
I can believe that.
It just like resonates too much with 2002 D.
D, does it surprise you to know that there's a Kidz Bop version of this song?
It actually doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, this is a song that is made for babies.
This is a song, yeah. This is a song for babies. This is not this is barely music. We've got Aaliyah with More Than a Woman. I'll be more CGI motorcycles. I can't believe it. Did the people who were making Now know?
More CGI motorcycles.
They were like, we just need as many CGI motorcycles as we can.
It's just... I almost wonder if it was a thing where it was like, there, some guy came up with it for like one music video that maybe we haven't even seen. And everyone was just like, all right, we can just do that. Like, you just give us like the, I don't know, like the program for putting dipshits on motorcycles and we'll just make it happen. He's like, this can't be a thing where, like, six different people were like, no, we need to have a scene.
I think, like, an early version of some CGI editing software just came with, like, this default CGI motorcycle, and everyone's like, well, fuck it.
Yeah. Yep.
This video takes place in a CGI motorcycle. It zooms into the tailpipe.
That was...
They're performing around, like...
it does. It's...
CGI pistons and shit.
It's peak CGI motorcycle.
We've gone another layer deep, folks. We've incepted the CGI motorcycles. If we go into Aaliyah's brain from here, we'll see Leonardo DiCaprio fighting Scary Terry. despite that, this song is great.
God damn it. Yeah, no, it is a really good song. It's not as good a music video as like some of her other music videos, like Queen of the Damned, but it's still a pretty good music video for her.
Yeah, this is the last video she shot before she went to film the video for Rock the Boat, which that was what ended her life, unfortunately. Again, you know that this is a Timbaland song because for as good of an ear he had as a producer, Timbaland songs are all kind of Timbaland songs, but him and Aaliyah have to be one of the best singer-producer combos in history because he just knew how to write for her.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They made magic together, and this is one really good example.
Her voice is really strong. She's singing about a topic like, I'm going to be a great girlfriend, like, I'm going to be really good to you, that is, you know, been sung a million, trillion, gazillion times.
Yep. Sung it has been sung to death.
Yeah, but it's done in a more interesting way. Mm-hmm. The lyrics are good but basic. Her voice carries through. The harmonies are fantastic. I'm all in on this song. I'm all in on Aaliyah. Like, she's got an honorary place in the Now and Again Hall of Fame, I think.
Absolutely. The video that I saw at least had the decency to add that RIP at the end, which was good.
Yeah.
You're right. Like, it's not a great written song, but it is, like, she makes it a great song.
Yeah, an artist's performance.
And it's produced to be a good song.
Right. Production is huge because, hey, guess what, folks? There's bass in this pop song, and that means...
You can thank Timbaland.
You can tap your foot to it, and it's catchy. Yes. And her performance carries it, too.
This is way before he became big in any reasonable sense, right?
Yeah, he's not...
He's just kind of been in the background of a bunch of stuff up until now.
Yeah, he's not coming out and being part of every song. Like, in Are You That Somebody, he does that, like, baby girl verse. But then he kind of goes back into the booth, at least on Aaliyah tracks. He'll really... A lot of people will know his name in a couple of years when he produces Nelly Furtado's Loose and does Promiscuous.
Right.
And has that verse where... And also where he lets everybody know that he doesn't actually know what Promiscuous means.
It's okay.
But we'll get to that in a bunch of episodes.
That's somebody else's topic to talk about.
I would have loved to slide into the universe to see...
Like the inside of a motorcycle?
What Aaliyah put out. Yes. I want to do an amazing journey into a motorcycle to repair it.
It's the president's motorcycle. You're shrinking down to go and repair it before it explodes.
Exactly. Are you a bad enough dude to fix the president's motorcycle? No, I'm not a bad enough dude. I have to be more than a woman.
Somebody write this.
Whom twit trailer line. I would love to
see now I'm picturing that line delivered by like the woman who played Eowyn from Return of the King. Because, I mean, that's essentially that exact scene, right? Well, that's that exact scene, right? Like, it's going to take, like, a really badass guy to do this. And just like, well, I'm actually a lady.
And she does, oh my god, I just got to the point of the video where she rips off her helmet, and it turns out that she is the badass motorcycle driver.
Yes, exactly, right? This, I can totally see this working. This is why we had that D&D discussion at the beginning of this.
So we can bring everyone down to our nerd level instead of just dragging them into it at third gear.
Exactly. Yeah. No, you have to ease them in. You can't just be talking about an Aaliyah song and then go right into Lord of the Rings. It just doesn't work.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, no, that's never happened in a conversation in the history of the world. Aaliyah segue into Lord of the Rings.
World first.
Now, I want to slide into the universe where she's alive, and, I mean, for multiple reasons, but, like, I want to know, I guarantee you she would have been able to, she wouldn't have gone away. She would not have gone away. She would have followed the trends. Yeah. She would still be doing stuff, I think.
I mean, she's got there's a timelessness to her that, like, she absolutely would have still been somebody we'd be talking about now.
100%. I think a lot of that relies, again, on how good she's always been. She's got a charisma. She's great. We've talked about charisma in videos, and she has always had that since the first time she appeared. And Timbaland is ahead of his time as a producer as well.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, the two of them, that team would have gone significantly farther than they were able to go. And it really sucks that they weren't.
I mean, it's entirely possible that if you do slide into that other universe, instead of Promiscuous sung by Nelly Furtado and Timbaland, it's like Aaliyah and Timbaland, and it might even be better.
I could see that. I could absolutely see. I mean, I could almost see a world where he fucking wrote that song for her.
Yeah, yeah. And the sad thing is that, like we said, this is the last video along with Rock the Boat that she filmed, and this is the last album. We're going to get a couple of songs. Now, I don't know if they're on now as 100%. But there are songs that are going to be released in like 2003, 2004. Mm-hmm. Same thing with Biggie and Tupac and what's happening now with Prince. Songs that never really should have left the vault.
Right.
But whoever owns her estate trying to capitalize and releasing those songs that never made the cut onto anything, that just kind of like almost in some ways devalue the legacy because they just never should have been out there.
It's the usual kind of like vulturism you see in any kind of art. It's the reason why we have like Ghost at a Watchman now in 2017, which is something that should never have seen the light of day and did because of shitbags.
Yeah, or like CGI Paul Walker.
It's stuff
that's like, it feels weird and oogie, and it's just like, yeah. I mean, you can almost understand why it's happening, but
yeah.
It's not worth it in a lot of ways.
There's cases where I can totally see that being okay. Like, what's the example from, I mean, it's a forgettable movie, but the one with Heath Ledger, where he died and, like, everybody came out to fill in different parts of that movie.
Imaginarium of Dr. Parnassus.
That, wow. I would have had to look that up.
It's a but, yes, Terry Gilliam,
I mean,
joint.
Like, that's a case that is understandable. You know, it's like a bunch of this guy's friends coming out to kind of, like do a good thing. See this done, but, like, not like this. Like, it would be like if they put CGI Heath Ledger into Dark Knight Rises.
Right, exactly. I'm sure that went through somebody's mind.
I'm sure it did. I'm so glad that didn't happen, because that would have been, oh boy.
Yeah, I'm glad that they've already announced that they won't be CGIing Carrie Fisher into episode 9. Because that just, after Rogue One, I feel like they opened a lot of doors that would be difficult to close, and that kind of slammed it on them.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's a very sensible decision. I mean, it's the right decision that they made, and I'm glad that they made it. And honestly, I fully expect that was not a unanimous decision, and I really hope that whoever said that they probably should still go ahead with it is no longer working there.
Yeah, I mean, that stuff we'll never be privy to, but overall, I'm glad it's not happening.
Yep.
We're in that kind of zone of
where we don't want to talk about the rest of this album, because that's why we've been talking about anything else.
You know, we've talked about it, especially with Nico, because he loves himself some R&B more so than me, and I can get into R&B, don't get me wrong. But this is, the early 2000s are just a fucking black hole for R&B. So let's burn through these pretty quickly so we can start off episode 2 with a bang. This is B2K with Uh-Huh. Got you good, cause I'm this is a boy band at the end of the boy band run, not knowing that their time is already up.
Yeah, this is boys already being men and needing to go get real jobs.
Yeah, Omarion is going to come from this band, and he's going to have a couple of pretty decent tracks in a couple of years. We've talked about some of those bland R&B boy bands, where just it, they harmonize better, but overall the songs are just kind of there.
Yeah. I mean, like, I listened to the song yesterday, and I can't remember a damn thing about it, and I actually don't, I honestly don't have much more input that I can give on this song. It's just like another forgettable, bland R&B song that sounds like every other forgettable, bland R&B song.
I almost want to give the song points for having a real beat, whereas, as we said, a lot of songs just didn't. But right. It's not a good one.
But I mean,
one.
Like, that's a beat. I mean, that's a credit you can give to a straight up pop song that's got a beat to it. That's not something that you can do for an R&B song, because one of those letters means something that kind of has to be there.
Yeah, I don't have much to say about the song, except I imagine that whereas a lot of people who saw, you know, the JTs and the Backstreets and the Nick Lachey's, and was like, so much of their, not so much of their popularity, but a large chunk of it was like, I want to have sex with that guy.
Mm-hmm.
This feels really weird, because this is like, I feel like they're maybe like 16 or 17, and they are shirtless and way more shredded than I have or will ever be in my life. it feels bad, yep. Man.
It's, I mean, it's like, it is the guy equivalent of the Britney leaning down into the camera. It's
yeah.
just there.
Yeah. And,
it's a proud tradition.
I get it.
But it's still skeevy.
I get it. And I'm feeling it, but it's a bad song.
Yep.
Next, yeah, B2K, uh-huh, more like nuh-uh. Ja Rule, Always On Time, featuring Ashanti.
Always on time.
Thank God there's another lady here to carry Ja Rule through a song.
Yep. It's a it's
Hey,
a,
Ashanti rules.
It's an okay song.
Yeah.
It's one of the few songs that I can actually, one of the few R&B songs I remember from that time period.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, a credit to how often it probably got played.
We've called Ja Rule kind of like a poor man's DMX on the show before, and that's more when he's trying to carry his own songs. When he's doing these
right.
soft R&B, soft hip-hop songs.
He's like a backup.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm cool with him being a hype man for, like, your Jennifer Lopez's or your Ashanti's or your Eve's or whatever. Like, all day, I'm fine with that. But Ja Rule on his own, you can keep it.
Yeah. And like, on its own, it's pretty catchy. The lyrics are pretty well put together. It's a decent song. I can't remember much from the video, but other than that, it's a pretty decent song.
Yep. It's
I think
fine.
The video is just, like, the two of them singing.
I mean, it's certainly not going to make April sadness. Like, it's way better than that. But at the same time,
right.
I mean, the fact we've had some dire R&B over the last 10 nows, like, this could easily slip into, like, the top 10 of non-R. Kelly R&B tracks we've had on Now and Again. And it's still just, like, okay. I can't wait till we get some
yeah,
really
it's
good
like
R&B.
It's like a 10 with an asterisk.
Yeah, exactly. I'm hyped for R&B to make its big comeback, but it's not happening here.
Nope.
So, speaking of asterisks, next is, what the fuck is this song? Jade Anderson, Sugar High. Look.
Well, didn't we agree that we're skipping this one
yeah,
because there's no video?
Look, this is an executive decision, listeners. If you don't have a music video, if you don't have a Wikipedia entry, that means that no one remembers you. Sorry. Wait, I have to check again. Jade Anderson. It's cool that according to your own personal one-paragraph Wikipedia page, that your dad was some sort of musician. So I'm glad you got this vanity track done for you. But that
and it's better than Friday, so don't, you know, don't hate yourself that much.
I mean, I'm certainly going to remember Friday longer than I'll remember this song.
But, I mean, yeah, that's not saying much about Friday.
Yeah, no. I mean, Friday is to the room as like Sugar High by Jade Anderson is like a direct to Netflix horror movie.
I like how we still can't remember her name despite the fact that it's on the screen.
Yeah, I feel like she's like the Anne Veal of Now and Again. It's just like her.
Yeah. Her.
Yeah, so thanks for coming, Jade Anderson. Your name does sound like you're a pro wrestler. Speaking of weird pro wrestler names, Music is spelled with a Q, Soul Child, with Half Crazy is gonna wrap up the first end of Now and Again, Volume 10.
I'd hate to walk away from you.
This song's got some soul to it. I like this. I did not expect
oh, yeah.
this.
I'm feeling it.
After the
this kind of snuck up. I mean, like whoever put this in was essentially like, okay, well they're gonna definitely listen to the Shakira track. So we should probably put something around there to make it not sound like this entire middle is garbage.
Yeah, this song's cool. It's got a rhythm. It's got a vibe.
Yeah, it's
a sexy jam.
It's serviceable.
It's a band playing real instruments, and so much of the problem with R&B right now is how mechanical a lot of the beats and a lot of the, like, an R&B song, music and vocal performance should have a feeling to it. It shouldn't sound like an 808 all the time.
It should make you feel emotions that aren't boredom.
It should make you want to throw down, you know?
The video is a little bit generic. I mean, there's a little bit more CG, which is hilarious, but and other than that, it's just like them playing stuff and sitting around in rooms together.
Right,
And then there's a room trashing scene that is basically the room trashing scene from The Room.
I noticed that as well, and I dug the hell out of it.
It's pretty great.
I love just letting someone go and be like, hey, smash up this room that the prop department put together.
I mean, I feel bad for whoever to clean it up, but I don't feel that bad because it's pretty great.
You got one take, man. Just smash the shit out of this like you never smashed anything before.
Yeah. I mean, he even emerges from the bathroom to do it. It's like, it's almost like Tommy Wiseau saw this video before he started filming.
There's not nearly enough red dresses, though.
No, there aren't.
I feel it, though. I like the song. This was a nice surprise, especially after how bland a lot of the R&B leading up to this was. And this is, you know, kind of the last R&B song in that middle that these nows always do. Like we said, they love to segregate, and they stick all of that R&B right in the middle. And it's it's been bland because in 2002, R&B is kind of bland. And this is really good. I dug this. I don't know. Now they have dropped the last name. It's just Music or Musique. It's the Q. Who knows?
Yeah.
So maybe they're still going. I don't know. But I dig this song. I wish there was more from these guys because it's different from everything else that is apparently now acceptable R&B in 2001, 2002, but I don't know if we're going to see any more of this, even though I'd prefer this any day over more B2K.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Apparently, according to the Wikipedias, this guy is still active, and it's just one dude.
Good. I mean, I'm feeling this. I like this song.
He's from Philly.
Ah, that does look like Philly in this video, for sure, when they're outside.
Yeah.
You know, not a ton to say about it, but it's it's a nice...
Holy shit, he put on an album last year.
Oh.
This guy is still working.
Good.
You know, good on you.
Absolutely. On you. I'm scrolling through the YouTube comments, because I like to do that sometimes, because sometimes there's some real gold in there. And there's just someone who said, Daryl Jenks, shout out to you, 1 year ago. R&B was on its last legs in the early 2000s, but I've got a great memory of this song. And yeah, it's true. R&B was suffering, and this is different. But that's also probably why it wasn't huge.
This song was nominated for a Grammy.
Good. I mean, the Grammys are trash. Yeah. All industry awards are garbage.
Yeah, no. I mean, I'm not. Yeah.
Did you see? All right. So we're at the end of this album.
Well, we're at the end of this part of this album.
We're at the end, of this episode. But real quick, we're going to talk about some current events in pop music. Speaking of the Grammys and industry awards, real quick, some pop current events. Have you seen this woke Katy Perry bullshit?
No, I haven't.
Katy Perry was like, she was in an interview with Rolling Stone, and she said that all of the award shows are fake, and all of the awards that I've won are fake. They're constructs. That she's on that dank lound, man, and it's kicking in like that. That feels like a Jaden Smith tweet.
Yeah, seriously.
Like, is she trying to just bury her own career at this point? Like, seems she's like on this it. Weird tangent right now.
I don't know, man. I between that and like this, like whatever rivalry that I couldn't possibly give a fuck about is going on between her and T-Swift is like, I don't care.
Whoa. Wait, holy shit. So, all right, in the green room in between, while we were taking our bathroom break, we brought up Ska and how, like, me shitting on Ska so hard on this podcast is the most unlike High School Me, because High School Me loved Ska so much. Here's a headline that can summon old gods. Hear Calvin Harris, Pharrell, Katy Perry's bubbly Ska song feels.
Oh, Jesus.
You can keep that, sir.
Wow.
No, thank you.
No.
What have you heard this Swish Swish song that's apparently supposed to be dragging Taylor Swift?
No, I haven't. I don't listen to the radio ever nowadays. Like, I just kind of drive my...
Sorry about those technical difficulties at the end there. D claims he accidentally knocked his mic off of his desk, but I think he just wanted to get out of that terrible conversation. He will, of course, be back next time, so we can finish, I guess, arguably the better half of Now 10. As always, you can find us at the usual places. CageClub.me for the rest of the Cage Club Podcasting Network. At Now Again Podcast on Twitter. Right into the mailbag, nowandagaincast@gmail.com. There will be another mailbag episode coming up, so get your questions in, all two of you. And until we meet again, we will catch you on the flip side.